Brooke, if there's one thing that you can share with people and change people's minds on, and so I'm saying this as I kind of gave him a promise that I would constantly tell people this, is do not joke about killing yourself.
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. Thank you for joining me on another episode of Far Betterment, the podcast where we learn new things about old friends and old things about new friends. First of all, thank you for subscribing. And if you haven't subscribed already, please do. You can find us on any platform, Stitcher, Overcast, Apple, Google, Spotify, pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can subscribe to us. Just look for Far Betterment. Second of all, please don't forget to rate us 5 stars. It helps us a ton. If you've already rated us, thank you. If you haven't already, please do so. Again, it helps us a ton and lets people know that you enjoy what you're listening to. In this podcast episode, we are joined by Brooke Anderson. She's a talented artist out of Denver, Colorado. In case you guys didn't know where Denver was, it's in Colorado. And she is also, I don't know how to put this, a data miner, I guess, a data analyst. And so we talked a little bit about that, and that was super, super interesting. It's really incredible what people are doing with data these days, or data, however you want to say it. But back to her art. She's incredibly talented and a really big advocate for mental health and mental illness. And she's done some really incredible things in art, incredible things and incredible projects dealing with that. So I encourage you all to go check her out. I'll link her Instagram and things below in the description. So thank you to Brooke for being on. And without further ado, here's Brooke Anderson for Far Betterment. Oh, is this Brooke?
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. What are you doing?
Oh, you know, just giving you a call here for Far Betterment.
Just podcasting it up.
Yep.
I hope you're excited. I don't know.
No, like, I really am. Yeah, I really am. We'll talk about whatever and
what's your name?
We'll make it work. Yeah, my name's Andrew.
Andrew.
And I am owner, I guess, of Far Betterment, and I'm really excited to have you on. I've been looking at your social media ever since we started talking, and kind of like lurking and checking out like all your art and stuff. And oh my God, your art's incredible. Like you can really, this is going to sound odd, but you can really like feel, what you're like putting into it. And I don't think a lot of art these days like touches people in that way necessarily. I think a lot of it's like very, I don't know. I don't want to say cookie cutter, but similar.
Well, you're going to make me cry already.
Well, don't do that yet.
Really cool.
Save that for
really
the middle. Cry the middle. In the middle.
We got to get to the middle.
That way we can get people there and then cry like for 10 minutes or so. And then that'll buy us some extra time. And
perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll add some buffer time.
That's
I'll
right.
really think about questions for like 2 minutes.
There you go. Yeah, so I read through those materials that you sent me and stuff. Thank you for that, by the way. I don't get those.
Yeah, sorry, it was kind of last minute, but I was like, oh, no.
No, I'm so glad you sent those because actually it brings up a lot of questions and some more compliments, I guess, to pay you that.
I don't need any of those.
Oh, I know you don't, but I just thought like the project that you worked on in Fort Collins, I used to live up in Fort Collins. Yeah, so that kind of hits close to home.
Right now.
Yeah. Yes, we are. Sorry.
Okay.
I'll forget to tell people that. No, this is perfect. No, this is absolutely perfect. And yeah, I used to live up in Fort Collins, and I mean, it wasn't like dreary or anything. Like, I loved Fort Collins. It's probably one of my favorite places I've ever lived. But like, from the sounds of that project, now I'm kind of jealous that I can't see it and can't be up there and witness all like the murals and stuff, because we didn't have that when I lived there. So I think that's really cool.
When did you live there? I was there probably 2010 to 13.
Oh, I was way before that. Probably like, yeah, I was probably 2000, like 2003, 2004.
Have you been there recently? It has changed so much. Like the campus, the town, it's actually hip. I can tell you even a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. Okay. You guys are going to do this annually, right?
I was just like the first part of it. The person who actually started it, she's an amazing artist here in Denver. Her name is Lindy Zimmer. I'm just going to give her a shout out because I really look up to her a lot. She's one of my mentors here. But she lived up in Fort Collins, and I think last year is when she started the Fort Collins Mural Project, and it was more like not commercialized. It was a few people on one big wall and maybe a couple other murals, but wasn't big like how she made it this year. And this year, she just went after it. She got sponsors. She wanted to pay artists. She didn't want to compete with like Crush Walls or anything like that. But she just took it upon herself to change the face of a city, and that was really cool. And she basically did an artist call, and that's how I saw it. And I applied with a couple of designs as well. But she invited, I guess, 20 of us out, or maybe 20 plus, and then got 20 plus walls. And New Belgium Brewery was a huge sponsor, and they always are in the town of Fort Collins. But it spanned across south of College, which is the main street in town, mm-hmm. to North College, which is really cool. And I was on the North College side of things. But really, I just wanted to go large scale with my artwork. So this summer was the first time where I've actually applied for murals and applied for large scale projects. And I will end, I still think it's summer. It's really not, but I just finished one of my latest murals, and I will end this summer, quote, air quotes, with 12 murals. And so I kind of elevated myself, and Fort Collins Mural Project was kind of the beginning of that. So I'll talk about the piece, if you want me to even get into that, of how I applied and what piece I did, and the kind of the suicide awareness.
Absolutely, yeah.
Project piece that was actually accepted. So I just started morphing. We could talk a little bit about this later, but I started morphing my two passions together. So by day, I am a data analyst for a large ski company, and I look at all sorts of patterns within data and within digital data, in a sense. I really like the aspect of learning human behaviors and potentially using marketing and manipulating human behaviors, in a sense. So it's kind of creepy, but I can tell what you do online. but really, I've done art for, gosh, as long as I can remember. But I haven't really posted much of my art until recently. And this summer, I was thinking of, well, I want to go large scale. I want to post more of my art. What should I do? How should I mesh some things in my life together, my two passions? So I was thinking, gosh, I really want to paint statistics, which sounds so nerdy and so honestly kind of no one wants to really do that ever. I don't think anybody would want to paint statistics in their life, but I guess I wanted to. So I started researching about things that I deeply care about. And this is on my free time. This is me looking up data sets on my free time. I can talk a little bit about more of how I find these data sets and what I look up. But one that really stuck out to me was suicide awareness or suicide. That's where I'm at. And I came across a stat of 130 suicides happen a day in the United States. And that, to me, like 130, you read that, but you don't really understand that when you read it. I think you understand things when you actually see it. And that's where I, in my mind, at that point, I wanted to create art that has meaning behind it and that people can look at a design and think, oh, well, that's really cool. But they have no idea what this other meaning is behind it. And when they find out that meaning, like the statistics in my work, they take a step back and realize, wow, you know, you actually depicted that stat, and I can look at it and understand now what that means visually. So it reminds me of, do you remember, oh gosh, I don't know, it was like the 2000s, like where the Truth commercials came out about tobacco?
Yes.
So that is basically like that guerrilla marketing style is kind of my motivation. Because they would have, I don't know, flash mobs or whatever you call it, 100 people, say, 1,000 people, I think is what I remember the stat. But they would have 1,000 people walk out in Times Square, and they just, like, collapse. And then people around them are, like, looking around, and then they realize, oh, and then they would put the stat on the TV. That to me is way more impactful than reading about or hearing about or seeing some billboard with just a stat on it. I think it needs to be a little bit more impactful for people to understand the severity of stats. And it doesn't have to be, I don't know, really deep meaning every single time. I've done some silly ones, but that to me is really what I think speaks to why I do statistical work with my art, is making that impact. So let me get back to the whole story. I was researching this stat on suicide, and I said, well, gosh, what can I do to depict that number? And I was like, well, I guess I can put 130-something on something. So I started off with circles, and I think circles are honestly just really therapeutic to draw and paint anyway. But I started on a blank canvas with 130 red circles. And then I just started thinking about this overall suicide and mental health and how suicide is basically, and mental health is in the background of everyday life. People don't talk about it. People get uncomfortable to talk about mental health. They get uncomfortable talking about sadness or that they even need help. So I decided to put like a smiley face emoji over that. 130 dots in the background, and then the smiley face emoji is on top of that. And it basically is a representation of what happens in real life. Like, we are putting on an emoji and a mask, a smile that's actually so much more in the background of, I say we as collective, as humans.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
But really in the background is just all mental health and, you know, suicide and things that people don't want to talk about. So I decided to apply, I decided to test how people would react to it on my Instagram. So I posted the original and I said, this is for sale. Proceeds will go to the suicide awareness hotline. and just kind of threw it up. I didn't know what people's reactions were going to be. And immediately, I think it was that night or the next day, someone had reached out to me and said, I need this piece. I want to buy this piece from you. And that's when I took a step back. I just have the chills right now from that. I took a step back and I realized, oh my gosh, this person that wants to buy this piece from me is a suicide attempt survivor. And it just came full circle of that this person wanted this piece as a reminder that they could have been one of those red dots. They could have been that statistic. And absolutely, the piece went to them. And I didn't know where SAS and this whole piece was going to take me. But I decided to apply to put this on a wall and to see what can come of it. So I applied to Fort Collins Mural Project, and I didn't even tell them actually that story of that person who owned this original was a survivor of an attempt. And they picked it. They wanted that piece on a wall, which was really cool in Fort Collins. And it kind of came full circle for me when I was painting that wall. When I got there that day, I just remembered the story from the person who owns the original piece. And they actually attempted in Fort Collins. They attempted in that city.
Oh, wow.
That the piece is going up on. There's a reservoir up there, and this person tried to drive off and survived. And I knew this person at the time when that happened. And a few weeks after, you know, I got to, this person stayed with me. We talked about their experience. And I mean, I've known this person since high school. So it was just came full circle of, wow, I made one impact. There's so much more impact that can be made if someone can just see this piece and understand the severity and understand what the 130 dots mean. When I put this piece on the wall, I put a key next to it saying 130 suicides happen a day in the United States. It's okay to get help. And it's funny, that morning, before I even started this whole mural, I didn't even have a name for it. And for the press and for the publications that Fort Collins Mural Project was going to put me in, they were like, we need a title for this. So I named it that morning. I mean, the original doesn't even have a name, but I guess it does now. And I named it that morning, and I named it It's Okay, because it's okay to get help, and it's okay to even have feelings. It's okay to have depression, you know, but it's also okay to get help. So I named it that, and the key next to it said 130 suicides happen a day in the United States, and it's okay to get help. So that was the title of the whole piece. And recently, I got to connect with that person who owns the original again and got to talk a little bit more in depth about his attempt and after it. And he says, Brooke, if there's one thing that you can share with people and change people's minds on. And so I'm saying this as I kind of gave him a promise that I would constantly tell people this is, do not joke about killing yourself. So that's what I want to even stress and even say to you is there's people that he doesn't even know that will say, oh, I don't know, whatever it is that day. Oh, Chipotle's not open or Chipotle's out of chicken. I'm going to kill myself. Like that's,
yeah.
But he hears those things from people and he goes, whoa, like, this is not a joke. This person actually sent it, and now people are joking about it. So that, I just wanted to share that with you. But that's not entirely the whole story of this mural. When I put about 28 hours into this mural, and I got a call a couple days later saying I have to cover it up.
Really?
Because it was too because it was too political. I haven't shared this at all, even on my Instagram. And there's a couple other reasons behind that. And so it was kind of like, wow, this whole article came out about me on 303 Magazine and my artwork and statistics, and it made such a beautiful impact. And now people don't want to have this conversation, and I have to go cover up my own artwork. 28 hours worth of work because it's too political. So at that point, I was like shot down.
Yeah, of course.
I'm like, well, great. Like, this whole art and statistics and, you know, murals and large scale work is kind of, I don't know what to think about it right now. Mm-hmm. So I got an offer. I was working on another project at the time, and a few days later, they reached out to me and was like, instead of you putting, I don't know what it was going to be emojis or something. Instead of you putting emojis on this wall, we want your original piece. And they showed me the suicide awareness piece. I was like, well, they actually want this. And it just made this whole part of this mural and story of the suicide awareness piece have an ending, which is really cool, is because it doesn't live in Fort Collins now anymore, but it lives right downtown Denver in a place where a lot of people take a lot of pictures of it. So, and it just adds to the whole story of nobody wants to talk about mental health, and nobody wants to especially talk about suicide. So I did have to go cover up my work, and instead of the 130 red dots and a smiley face, I put 130 smiley faces over all the red dots. So the set still lives there.
Oh, good for you.
The set still lives there, which is funny. I had to cover up the key, but at least the mural still stands somewhere in Denver and means a whole heck of a lot to someone and to a lot of people.
I think that's crazy that they made you cover that up. That's insane to me that... I just can't believe it. I mean, I'm so sorry that happened to you.
And I talked to, no hard feelings, I talked to, you know, the owners of Fort Collins Mural Project and, yeah, and my mentor, and she said, this happens all the time in art, in the art world. And it just, you know, it just sucks that it has to be you and a statement piece, yeah, honestly. So, but gosh, that was a lot about the suicide awareness.
That is a cause, I guess you could say, that I hold really dear, or close to my heart. We talked kind of privately, kind of a little bit about this and why, like, mental illness, mm-hmm, and stuff's so important to me as well. So I think you kind of get, mm-hmm, like, the impact that that has on me. So I'm just happy that you shared that, because I think it's important, and not a lot of people realize how close they actually are to it. Not suicide itself, but an attempt, or somebody who's thought about it, or somebody who's considerate, or even just a flash in their mind. Like, you don't realize how close you actually are in proximity to that. And I think that story that you told specifically, like, demonstrates really well how much of a secret it is, and how people think they should be ashamed of it, or they can't share it. And it's so important to share, because if you're not telling people, you know, if you're not sharing, then maybe someone else might think it's not okay to share too. So thank you for doing that. I, I don't care how long. You can talk about that as long as you want.
I really appreciate that. This has even opened up such a lane of communication with people that I didn't even expect to. There was friends that I've had, and even strangers reach out to me through Instagram direct message because they saw this piece and they said, you know what? This piece relates so much to me. I have stood there with a gun in my hand. So I was like, wow, you're telling me this and I really appreciate that. Like, that's really cool. Or they're like, this piece means so much to me. I'm so thankful for the art community right now. It's just a really good feeling that tying my passions together made an impact. And I can talk about a little bit what this has led to, like, now. You should edit that out.
No. I can if you want, but you're fine. You should hear my intros.
You can leave that in there. That's whatever.
You're totally fine. No, at all. You're totally fine.
This whole wave of kind of mental health that I've been riding on and tying it with artwork has led to another big mural. I think it's my biggest mural this summer. And we don't even have a title for that either, now that I think of it. But when my really good friends came to me and, well, first I got offered to do a wall for someone who I painted for before. And it's on a pretty big major street here in Colorado, Colfax.
I'm familiar with that one.
There's a lot of good things and bad things.
Oh, absolutely. It's like one of the busiest intersections in the country. I mean, that's not a bad place to streets. Like, that's not a bad place to have a mural at all.
it's really great.
Yeah, but absolutely.
I wanted to continue with the mental health theme that I was doing. So my friend and I teamed up on, I don't know, I think it's like 25 feet by really ridiculous tall. she brought this idea of her sister's friend. She wanted to do her sister's friend's eyes because she has attempted suicide twice in her life. And I said, let's do it. And she asked, Brooke, what else should we do? And I said, I want to do sunflowers, and I'll tell you why. I want to do sunflowers because it represents life, it represents community, and it represents living, in a sense. The sunflowers have a circadian rhythm, which is super weird. They kind of rise with the sun, and then they bow at night. And in large fields, sometimes they kind of turn towards each other. And I don't know if you knew this, but if they're kind of planted alone or if you see a single sunflower, it kind of is droopy. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sad.
That's interesting.
So my favorite flower is a sunflower. I'm really, really tied to the color yellow. So I told my friend Rachel, I said, Rachel, let's do sunflowers to represent life and being happy and a community. And a couple days later, we did a mock-up, and she said, you're not going to believe this, but her favorite flower, the subject, the gal that we were painting, her favorite flower was a sunflower. I was like, whoa, I got the chills. So it just kind of all worked out, and we were painting on the wall, and we just had so many community members come out to us, and we wrote some hashtags on the wall. We wrote "It gets better" first, and then second was "Be a warrior," and then the third hashtag was "Everyday strong." And this was kind of in a part of town where there was a lot of homeless and poverty, and I mean, I don't know if I should say poverty, but I should more say low income.
Okay.
And this wall can be seen and this message can be seen for a lot of community members. But we actually had people walking by just thanking us, which is so humbling. It was just one after another. It was just kind of weird. It got to the point where I was just like, okay, this is weird. Is someone setting us up? And there is a lot of homeless in the area. And I could tell one guy who came by, he was a veteran. I could just tell it with what he was wearing and but he was pretty drunk. I couldn't understand anything that he was talking to me about, but he stopped in front of the hashtags and he read them. And then he looked at me and he like pointed at them and he said, "Thank you for that." I was like, whoa, this guy kind of snapped to reality, read what we wrote on our hashtags and just said, "Thank you." It was just really, really cool. So, just to see that positive impact, like it's a beautiful drawing, but it also means so much more once you kind of read or know about the artwork.
What specifically, like, what made you so passionate about mental illness? Was it the statistic that affected you so deeply, or was it something that you've always kind of been passionate about?
Yeah, I think the statistic really reminded me of something that happened in sixth grade. I think the first time I have been introduced to suicide was in sixth grade when my best friend killed herself. And if you think about what age you are in sixth grade, I think it's 11 or 12.
Yeah.
And to me, that I didn't understand it really at the time. I was someone who's there and wasn't there. But now that I'm a little bit older and kind of understand that severity, this 11-year-old got a hold of a gun. Like, that's unreal. To that sadness that this person felt is unreal. Like, I don't know how else to explain it, but reading that statistic kind of brought that back to me, and I was like, wow, like, there's these real feelings out there that people have and people don't understand or can't comprehend or can't afford it. I mean, point blank, to even get help, or they're embarrassed to. So the other side of it is I've always cared deeply about people a lot. I care about people being happy. I think that's kind of, when we first started talking at the beginning of the phone, our phone call is, I was happy and joking, and then it got way serious. But I care a great deal about people being happy and just kind of being silly and not taking life too seriously. And so it just kind of all came together this summer, really, of, like, wow, I know I can make a difference. And if I make a difference through artwork, my passion, this is going to be, if I can change one person's life, that makes me happy. That's cool. That's a really cool feeling. And I did. I changed one person's life. And then I'm just kind of like, wow, what else can I do? this is so small, like one person, that's it. But if I throw something on a wall, it could change 10 people's lives. That's cool too. And I think that's what is keeping me going. It's what really ultimately got me started was that statistic, that memory, and then caring a lot about people. And then what's keeping me going is, holy cow, I am making a difference. So I'm going to keep it going.
I hope you do. I really hope you never stop, because, and I'll tell you this, I've done some episodes and I've spoken with a number of people and stuff, and I can hear it in your voice, like, how much you sincerely and genuinely care. You know, like, you can tell mm-hmm. They're not just words to you. Like, you mean it, you're passionate about it, and you want to have an effect. And that has an effect on me personally. I appreciate that kind of I don't even know how to put it. I guess like that desire, like the, I guess it feels like it's more of a need for you to make an impact on somebody. Like, I love that, you know, that you need it, that you're hungry for it, that you want it, you have to have it. Like, you need to make an impact. I love that. So I hope that, I don't know. I hope that you know, like that makes an impact on me. So, mm-hmm. You know, thank you for that. Like, I just appreciate that. And,
I get the chills. And even we talked about how I was going to cry at the beginning of this, but you said wait till the middle.
Though. Don't do it yet.
I totally can. Just things like that just kind of fuels me. I have a couple other projects that I can't really say right now. Mm-hmm. Two are in the works of making this bigger. One, I have some support from a musician, and a pretty decent, bigger name musician, mm-hmm. and he's willing to help. And then the second one is teaming up with someone, and we may potentially be creating an app that ties artwork and murals and positivity together. So hopefully, maybe next podcast, invite me back when those things are done.
Oh, I 100% will, yeah.
I just have to throw it. I have to throw in the atmosphere so that it can happen and I can, you know, push. I set it to the public, so that means I have to go through with it.
I love that mindset.
When those are done, have me back.
I love that mindset. I'm kind of the same way. Like, if I say it out loud, I feel like I have to. Like, I don't have a choice.
It's like anymore. A diet.
It's a... huge responsibility.
It's like a diet. Nobody cares if you're doing your diet.
Yep. Oh my God.
If you don't announce it to Facebook, but holy shit, if you announce it to Facebook, then you got to do it. Yeah. Like, someone out there heard you.
Exactly. I love that. I wish more people did that because it like holds you accountable to yourself.
That's what I'm saying.
Yep.
All y'all listening, hold me accountable for what I just said. And in 6 months, if I don't have the beginning steps out, you better come at me.
Well, especially since we're going to have you back on.
Figuratively.
That's right.
Literally at me.
Well, don't be too harsh, though. I mean, you don't want to get hurt or anything, so... I will absolutely have you back on though. Yeah. But we're not done. We're not done yet.
I know we're not done. it's only the middle. I only started crying.
Well, hold it in for just like 10 more minutes at least. So you were talking about the homeless. This kind of brought up an interesting question for me. Cause you know, I'm from Denver as well. And, it's actually kind of,
know that.
Right? Did you not know that? Like, seriously?
No, you're calling me from a 919 number.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Yeah, this is my Skype number. I don't typically give out the real one. Yeah, I've got a 720 number, though, so.
That's what's up.
Yep. Yeah, I'm from Denver, and like, I always grew up around that, like, homeless situation. And, like, mm-hmm. You know, Denver's got, like, a pretty high homeless population. And I was just reading an article, or my wife actually, showed me an article about, Utah, and Utah, like, almost essentially like solved their homeless problem by doing something like that's so obvious, but yeah. So like unrealistic. I think for Denver, because they wouldn't want to, or maybe wouldn't attempt it, but they gave the homeless people homes. All they had to do was pay what they could. It was a percentage or a set amount of rent. And if they were addicted to drugs or had problems like that, abuse, anything like that, they had to seek counseling. And actually, Utah provided that counseling to them and the rehabilitation and things like that. Why do you think that other states haven't implemented like a similar program, or why wouldn't that work in Denver? Like, why wouldn't Denver want to do something like that?
Gosh, I hope we do. I know just recently we had a proposition on our ballot.
Okay.
Gosh, it was Proposition 300, but it was basically to allow homeless camping or not.
I saw that, yeah. Sorry.
What did you say?
I said sorry. I interrupted you.
Yeah, what the heck? So actually, I don't know. I think it's just all politics. A lot of money is involved, and it's really hard for people to understand a situation that they haven't been in themselves, and then just to try to think about situations and the money behind it is just too, I don't know.
A lot to of be politics. Honest,
I don't know. I think people have a loss of compassion too. I've actually done some homeless work. I think it was about 7 years ago. And the funny thing you bring this up is I kind of forgot about it until recently. 7 years ago, a group of, four or five of us went homeless in Denver. And we went homeless for 48 hours.
Oh, wow.
And we had dropped a couple weeks before that. We had drop off. And this was, gosh, I think we only had Twitter, or I wasn't doing anything with Instagram. But we had drop locations of drop hygiene products, and we were donating it to shelters around Denver. We had these custom-made shirts that says, "Ask me why I'm homeless," and we were actually panhandling to raise that money for shelters, and it was terrifying. I sleeping on the streets for 48 hours, that was unreal. I was the woman who did this, and I was lucky because I was with all guys and they were really protective. But I care a great deal, a lot about the homeless community too. But I also think that people don't understand, and what they don't understand, they can't really help. And sometimes ideas that come up within politics or thinking of grander scale ideas to help get shot down by either money or just not understanding, or people think there's greater things to worry about. And hopefully the city can figure something out. I do know that there have these tiny houses for homeless communities, but I don't even think that's the answer, because we had a block of them, and there was only, 50. But I was thinking, why don't you build an actual dang apartment and house 100 people? I thought it was a waste of space. But to be honest, I don't know. I think politics and people get locked up on, and I think opinions get thrown into the mix of why something like that hasn't been implemented yet.
It's a really interesting situation because, a lot of those people themselves suffer from mental illness and they can't get themselves out of that situation. But it almost seems like big cities kind of treat this problem the same way that they treat, I guess I see homelessness and mental illness being very intertwined and treated the same way. It's kind of a shame thing.
Totally.
And yeah, you shouldn't talk about it. And if you ignore it, it'll either go away or stay in the shadows, where it quote unquote belongs. So I find it interesting that a place like Denver, who I've always thought was a very progressive place, and
decriminalization of shrooms, but we can't figure out how to get people off the street.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's interesting,
other
right?
Things that people worry about.
It's interesting though, right? You would think a place like Denver, who's really progressive, wants to help out as many people as they can, and like takes community so seriously and pride of Denver so seriously, like has one of the biggest homeless problems in the country. It's kind of like a weird parallel. But anyway, sorry to bring something so like, politically charged up. Yeah. I just thought you'd have an interesting, opinion on that. And I was not wrong.
I'm sure. I have an interesting opinion on a lot of things.
No, I think we're pretty, I think we're pretty like-minded as far as that stuff goes.
Well, that's because you're from Denver.
Probably, right?
Denver people are the best. I'm just kidding. Other cities are great too. Don't move here.
That right there, that's super Denver of you to say. That's so funny.
Yeah, we're full. Denver sucks.
Oh, that's so funny. I was just talking with I don't know how well you guys know each other. Natalie Stroson or Strosen, I'm sorry. Yeah. On the last podcast, and how like that's a funny thing to me is like some people are on one side, they're like, don't move here. And then there's other people on the other side. They're like, oh, we love Denver. Come right? See what it's like. Well, yeah.
She was talking about transplants, right?
Yeah. Cause she's one. So.
Well, don't tell her. Hopefully she doesn't listen. Just kidding.
Oh my gosh. I hope she does listen.
Shout out Natalie. I was just with her on Friday for her event actually. So.
Did you tell her to move back?
No, I didn't even know that she was a transplant. And we're also doing a charity event, so that would be pretty, that would be poor timing.
It would be, yeah, you're right. You got to wait for, like, coffee or something.
And this then be is like, cool, you know, what you're doing for the kids, but can you move back now? I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, totally kidding. Yeah. No, I was just telling you, like, I get that. Like when I lived there, obviously I don't live there now. So, I don't have to deal with all that like traffic and all the going to visit though is a real pain in the ass. As far as like getting around now and, you know,
yeah, I keep telling everybody that
it sucks to go back. but you know, I've always been like real proud of being from Colorado and stuff. Like most natives are, we can't like stop talking about it. And
we're the worst.
we seriously are though. Like, people from Colorado, that's all we talk about is being from Colorado. That's super
true. I only know one other state that cares more about their flag than Colorado, and that's Texas. And they're definitely the worst.
I could see that. Texas.
Like, and we're definitely close second. Like, honestly, I have a lot of things Colorado flagged. I even have a hammock and socks and things hanging on my wall. I've painted things with Colorado flag. You know what? I'll do a stat on how many people. Oh, I do know a stat. I think it was a couple of years ago, though. 10,000 people were moving to Colorado a month. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. That's about when I got out. like, legitimately, after the legalization passed, I was like, nope, got to go. Because I just thought it was going to get busy and packed, like. And it did. And I was not about that.
Yeah. Come to Colorado and do mushrooms and smoke weed. Just kidding.
Yeah, and then go home.
We need to get back to like talking about artwork and something before it really derail us.
Yeah. People are like, what are they talking about?
I don't know. Yeah. Anybody who wants to call and bullshit, they can do that. We can have some great conversations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so back to mental health then. And actually, so you grew up in Denver, and like which area kind of, so I can picture it.
I grew up 20 minutes like southeast of Denver.
Okay, okay. So like
the burb
yeah,
life.
Okay, so like Parker area kind of?
Sort of, yeah. Okay. Centennial, Aurora.
Okay, okay.
Area.
So I grew up like the complete opposite side of you. I was like Westminster, Broomfield area.
Yeah.
So like complete opposite side. But I guess same kind of upbringing, kind of.
I don't know about y'all over there.
Sorry?
I love nothing. Keep going.
So you, well, now I lost my train of thought. This is all your fault.
Are we going to talk about art or mental health? We could talk about more of the statistics and like how, what I research and where I research.
Actually, yeah, that's a great topic. What about statistics was it like that interested you so much? Have you always been interested in statistics, like when you were a kid, or is that something as you got older that you got into?
Gosh, I would have been a really weird kid. Be like, hey guys, want to play tag and talk about stats?
How many people are playing tag in the United States?
I'd be like, actually, you know where the game of tag was invented and how many people played it? No, that was not
I would
me.
Totally be friends with you. I think I was that weird kid.
that's funny. No, I actually studied marketing.
Okay, all right.
When I graduated, I got a job within marketing, and what I was tasked with a bunch of, it was a small business, and I was tasked with a bunch of things like, here, send these emails out. And then they would ask me, well, how did the emails do? I'm like, well, I don't know. These suck. And here's the numbers behind it. And they're like, okay, well, how can we get it better? I'm like, oh, let me actually dig into the data. And I started being really interested in patterns and behaviors with my first job outside of college. And then I wanted to go bigger. So I applied for jobs in data analytics and I taught myself how to code for this job and walked into an interview, not really knowing how to code, but watching YouTube videos, and they tested me on what would we change about this piece of code if we wanted to change XYZ? Where would we change that? And I was like, oh, shit. Well, let me. And then I guessed right. So honestly, that job fell into my lap of kind of watching YouTube videos. But that job, I had access to a huge database. It was a Fortune 500 company. So okay. I would code and pull out data on behavior on a website. What were people doing? What did they click on? Why did they click on it? And I would have to formulate those answers for the business. They're like, well, hey, Brooke, how many people came on Black Friday and how much money, what was the top product and how much money did people spend on the XYZ? So I would literally pull that information. But then there was also things like, hey, Brooke, who came to our website, didn't purchase, but actually went to the store and bought things. So I wrote a code that, and this is so creepy, but I really enjoy this. I wrote a code that told people who came to the website what products you looked at, and then if you went to the store and bought that exact same product. So I wrote a code to tie online to offline. And if you guys think Google knowing all your information or like Facebook listening, that's just like the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. Like there are some gross things that you can do with data and find out about on people with data. Data is gold. Actually, I was just reading a stat. Of course I was. But data is worth more than oil right now.
Like, oh, wow. That's interesting.
It's unreal. The dollars and the power behind data, there's more power and money that can be behind data than oil, which is insane.
That's scary, but actually.
That's so freaking scary and so freaking cool. And then I just really started loving it. Like, humans are super interesting and stats are super interesting. What really got me into wanting to create and blend my two passions together is there, this is going to be so nerdy, but on Reddit, I don't even know how to Reddit. I don't know how to, whatever it is, but I just followed this one board that's called Data is Beautiful. And it's just so nerdy, but these people send out and tell you where to download data sets, or they get creative and do bar graphs with whatever data that they can. I don't know. It's really cool, but also I think no one is playing with data in the art world like I am.
No,
like, this is my everyday job at, you know, my 9 to 5, but it's also artwork to me. So I don't know. I'm really passionate about it.
I love that you're passionate about it. I know that sounds nerdy too, but like, like I kind of live for this kind of stuff because, first of all, I've always loved research, which sounds so weird, but like, research is amazing to me. Like, I love just looking things up and figuring things out and seeing why something is or why something isn't. Or like, I love that stuff. So you're speaking to me.
If someone has my Google history,
yeah.
I mean, they do. Google has my Google history. They're
true.
Probably profiled me and like under the weirdest person ever.
Maybe,
like, why is he looking up how many dead bodies are buried in?
But they totally need people like you.
I always want to know, like, the random numbers, like, anywhere. I've looked up stats about E. coli and, like, infected broccoli.
That's amazing.
It's so weird. But, like, I actually have, I think stats can actually be really funny and really informative as well. So, I mean, I have painted stats about adult rape cases, and then I've painted stats about food waste. And then I've looked up stats about, I don't know, E. coli. Like, it's just like, it can be all over the board. I think stats are endless, and the way that I can create a painting is there's no limit, I think.
What do you think is like the most useful stat to like society versus like the scariest thing you've seen stat wise?
Oh gosh, it depends on the topic.
Pick
the
one.
Most useful stat?
Yeah. Like maybe not useful, but beneficial or like positive.
A positive stat?
Mm-hmm.
That I've seen. I don't know. Don't ask me that.
Okay. What's a scary one then? Like, what's the scariest thing that you've seen data used for?
The scariest thing that I've seen data used for?
Mm-hmm.
Shit. I think, have you watched, I encourage everybody to watch The Great Hack. It's on Netflix. It's all about how data was used for altering people's thoughts in the election. I think the scariest thing that data can be used for is changing people. And it already has, and mm-hmm. it's been proven. I think the next top job, probably 3 years, is going to be a voice analyst. All it is we are giving people data, and it can be used to manipulate. And I think that's the scariest thing. Facebook knows so much about us. When we like someone's statuses, that pattern, if you keep liking someone's, I don't know, depressing things or commenting on those, or if you constantly like this one certain person's artwork, that's an algorithm. It's a human algorithm. We all have our own algorithm. And then when Facebook knows that, when Google knows that, that's when it can be scary because they can predict things. And they already have. They can predict and model these behaviors. I think it was 5 or 6 years ago where data was big, but this is like when Target just started playing in the data game. They started looking at people's buying patterns. And this one woman was started buying unscented lotion, vitamins, other things that indicated that she was pregnant. So Target went ahead and changed up their entire ad, paper ad that gets sent out in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
They changed up their ad and just threw a couple little baby things in there because they knew this girl was pregnant. And it's just the fact that we can get tricked, and we are getting tricked. And if you think that this little personalized ad is for you, it definitely is.
That's so crazy.
And so, like, next to lawnmowers or whatever it was, they just stuck, you know, diaper genie ad in there. And I literally do this at work. I can tell, I run tests on websites. And it's honestly, it's riding the fine line of creepy and convenience. I am totally unsafe with my data because I don't care. I'm like, shit, Google, listen to me all you want.
Yeah.
But definitely when you give me ads or when you something shows at my door, make sure it's what I want. Like, I'm giving you so much shit right now, all right?
That's
so, like,
great.
just be, at least be convenient.
Don't be wrong. Yeah.
God.
At least get my algorithm right.
Shit. That's what, yeah. I'm like, just... I don't eat Domino's. <I'm just saying. laughs> Based off my purchase history. Anyway, you know what you can do right now? Do you have a Gmail?
Yeah.
Okay. On your Gmail, you can look up your purchase history. So even in Gmail, they're tracking words
That's
like
insane.
Receipt or order confirmation. And you can literally, I'll send you a link because I forget it right now. I'll send you a link afterward. Probably post it for people who've made it this far and listening to me. You can literally look up your entire order history as long as you use that email to make purchases.
Oh, wow.
And literally, just for that information, Google has what you've purchased the past years. However long you've had that. So they already know what you like.
And
then they're changing. So Google, so like not only that aspect, they know what you're buying, they know what you like. They're literally the freaking search engine that everybody, 90% of people use. And they also know what you want to know. They know what you want to like. They know what you're searching. Like data. And so that was a really loaded answer for your one question of
no, not at all.
What's the scariest thing you can do with data? And it's already happening. Like, it's already kind of scary, but I think it's cool and I'll just make artwork out of it.
Well, good point, I guess. That does bring up an interesting point though. So like you said, you're not worried. Like you're not scared. Like this is your job and you do it. You see it every day. And, you know, I think I'm probably one of those people, like, I don't care necessarily what they collect off of me, but I do recognize the repercussions of that in the future, especially like you said, with hacking elections and technically not hacked, but in the sense that they use data to manipulate an entire election is terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, you can manipulate people through... Oh, gosh, you have to watch this. And when you watch it, you let me know.
I will.
Your thoughts. We'll talk in the next podcast.
Sounds good.
But seriously, they're talking about they created hundreds of specialized ads for one group that they have put people in. Like, it's just ridiculous. But I think it's just, if data is that powerful,
mm-hmm.
then I can be that powerful with data myself.
Oh, that's such a great way to look at it. Like, especially from the art sense, like that's so incredible to think about it that way. And so true.
Well, I need to write that one down because that just came to me. So I'll have to use it for a caption in my Instagram post or something.
Don't worry. I'm actually going to save it and...
Yeah, save that one for me.
I will, because that was great. That was super quotable.
Perfect. Well, edit all that out about me saving it.
Okay, sounds good. I love that. Oh, man. You're so, like, entertaining. I love this. This is fantastic.
I'm great.
Sorry?
I said I'm sure this is great.
No, it is. You know what? It's funny, like, obviously I want people to listen and stuff, but a lot of these are for me anyway. So if I'm having fun, like, I don't even care how the episode does, which sounds terrible, but
selfish.
Like,
just kidding.
But no, like, I think this is going to be like super, super like, interesting and entertaining. Like, you're really like endearing. So you have nothing to worry about. Trust me.
Have you done really bad interviews?
No, you know what? And maybe that's just me, but I am so...
High praise.
I'm so interested in, like, people and what they are about and what they...
Yeah.
Like, what makes them go, like, what motivates them, that I don't think I could have a bad one because I'm learning something, you know? Like, and I just like that. That, to me, is interesting in itself, is just...
I love that.
...learning. So, no, I don't think so. I'm sure there's been stuff that people haven't enjoyed, but that's, I enjoyed it, you know, like, so I don't even know which episodes those are, I guess.
How many episodes do you have?
Yours will be 52.
Cool.
So, yeah, and then we're booked up through October, so I'll probably be at like 60 by the end of November or something like that. I don't remember.
That's insane. So. Before I get you sidetracked, and
yeah, no.
I do want to talk a little bit more off the record because I really want to know more about you and your podcast.
But, oh, sure.
I'll get us back on closing or remarks or anything that else you want to know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Is there? I don't really do this often, but I think that. I really want to know what you have to say. So is there anything that you specifically feel like we haven't talked about or that we've missed out on, you know, touching on?
Gosh, probably. I don't know. I could even tell you, oh, I remember. So I started caring a lot about my relationships around me and the people in my life, because I told you about the person who I lost in sixth grade,
mm-hmm.
but I personally lost my father when I was 20.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry.
And I started caring about people being happy and who's in and around my life, and are those people happy and are those people smiling? Because, you know, that's who you have in your life right now. And it's about, where was I going to go with it?
That's a hard thing to talk about.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's also helped my creative journey and me being so passionate about other people, is because I have dealt with the hardest losses that you can deal with. I mean, I don't think that you should ever compare losses, because everybody's different and everybody deals with things differently. But I was 20 years old. I had to move back from, I went to actually Fort Lewis in the beginning, which is another school 6 hours south. But I had to come back from school when that happened, and just kind of reevaluated of my life, of who's around me. Are people happy? Because that's who you have in this life. So, if I can make your life happy, your life better, then that's what I'm here for. But it's also just because life is short, and losses like that and mental health and should not hold you back. Yeah. I think everybody deserves to be happy, in a sense.
Do you think you are a different person? And obviously this has an incredible effect on you, but I guess, do you think you viewed suicide differently before your father passed away versus after? And how do you view it now?
So my dad didn't pass the suicide, but you can still, we can rephrase the question, but I think it's still important. It's more along the lines of, I dealt with suicide really early on in sixth grade.
Yeah, absolutely.
And me not understanding. But the next biggest impact on my life was when I was 20.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I had another significant loss.
Yeah.
And that was when I could actually understand, for the most part, mm-hmm. about losing someone and a loss. And it was not due to mental health or suicide, but the factor is still there, is that someone was here and is no longer. I think it made me understand that people being here on this earth and having air in your lungs is really, really important. And if I can help someone be happy, or if I can joke around with someone, or if I can make your day better, or if I can seriously ask you, I started doing this recently. I don't ask people, I do, but I try to catch myself. Like, how are you? I think that question is so, it's like a blanket statement of like starting a conversation. I've started asking people, how are you feeling? Are you feeling okay? Like, are you doing good? And it just changed the whole aspect of your conversation with them. But to tie it back into losing somebody at an early age, I really think that if you take the time to understand and make people happy and care about people, is really how my outlook changed before. Before, I was just like kind of, I've always been silly, but I was just kind of, I didn't care much about, I shouldn't say care much about people, but really I was just like living my life kind of selfishly.
Things that didn't affect you. Didn't affect you.
Yeah.
Okay.
In a sense. I'm just like rambling. But
no, not at all.
Before and after each experience that I've had losing someone in my life, it has definitely changed my outlook. And now I just care a great deal about how people are feeling and who you are, and tell me your story, and then let's impact each other for the better.
Did that, I mean, obviously that did change like the trajectory of your life, losing your father at such a young age. How do you feel like you use that experience to be a positive person? Like, how do you stay positive?
It's, you know what? It's really, really hard on some days and really easy on others. Mm-hmm. I think when someone suffers a loss, and someone suffers anything for that matter, it's all about dealing with things differently and understanding that everyone deals with losses differently. So I think that changed my outlook, because I went through it and I drew a lot. And honestly, I got a lot of tattoos in that time period, because I think that was like my way of healing and drawing and art and getting, I don't know, but I think I have come to the understanding of people deal with everything differently. So as long as I can be there for as any sort of support, whether if it's art or chatting with someone, or if I'm simply asking like, how are you feeling? And I go along with the understanding of, oh, maybe they don't want to talk to me that day because they are going through something, and that's totally fine too. So I think with everything that I've experienced, especially that loss of my dad, made me understand people are all different, and we are all trying to figure out this world and navigate situations, and it may be different from mine, and that's fine.
Well,
and I don't know if I answered your question, but I think I tried.
No, you absolutely did. You answered it exactly how I think I would have wanted you to. So thank you. No, I think like your perspective on life and like your experiences, they're so, like, you can tell stuff cuts you really deeply, whether it's good or bad. Like, it has a major impact on you, and you really pay attention to like the things around you mm-hmm. and the people around you. Mm-hmm. And like from this episode, I hope that's something people really take to heart, because we don't pay enough attention to each other and like something as simple as like what you said, how are you feeling today? That's huge, especially to somebody who's, I don't know, not just suffering from mental illness, but just having a horrible time or a bad day or a bad situation happened, you know, like that makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Or it's showing people you actually care.
Exactly. And yeah.
I want to put this out there. Like, yeah, you can ask people, how are you feeling? But I want people to actually care.
Yeah.
Let's just point blank. Let's just care about each other.
I don't think there's a better place to end that on, actually. I think that's such a important message. Like, I really do. I want to make sure people remember that. Everybody, you should be more more caring, like more attentive.
Better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And change your passwords on Facebook and share whatever data you want about yourself.
Stop searching for things. Just use encyclopedias and your eyes. Don't use your phone anymore, is what we've learned today. And Target is evil. Just joking, Target. We want you to sponsor us. So just kidding.
What's up, Target?
Search for
Target's
anything.
Like,
yeah, Target's the best. I love Target. So awesome. Well, no, thank you so much, Brooke, for being like willing to do this and being on and being so like open and stuff. I know I say that to everybody, but I mean it every single time. Like, you guys don't have to do this for me. So I'm always so humbled and honored to have people on that are willing to like share their lives with me. So thank you for doing
it. Yeah, absolutely. Of course. I'm honestly excited that I can share and change any perspective about data and art and people. So I really appreciate that.
You've definitely made an impact on me, for sure. And I think that you are destined to make an impact on a lot of people. And it sounds like you really already have. So I hope you just continue to do the very important work, especially in the art world that you're doing. So thank you for that.
I appreciate it. Can I cry at the end too? Because that was really cool to hear.
You can cry wherever you want, really. I mean...
I've held it together pretty well, so.
You have, yeah. But yeah, thank you again for being on.
Of course. We'll see you soon, because I just set myself up for another podcast in 6 months. So.
100%, yeah, absolutely. And that concludes another episode of Far Betterment. Thank you to all my listeners. Thank you to all my subscribers. And thank you to everybody who's rated the podcast so far. If you haven't subscribed, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple, anywhere that you listen to podcasts, including where you're listening to podcasts right now. And please, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. It helps us tremendously. I can't tell you how much it helps us. If you want to give us anything less than 5 stars, please don't. There's really no reason.